You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Honey, I don't know what to do. I just went to the fridge and... Oh, please ready yourself. We're out of beer.
Well, that's no problem, honey. I was just listening to OneOfUs.net and they said on there that, apparently there's this company, Oscar Blues Brewing, that makes all kinds of great beers. They were the first people to put craft brew in a can.
What, you mean like... All those other beers that are now, those craft beers that they put in the can that I see everywhere, they couldn't have done it first.
They did with Dale's Pale Ale. It's so delicious. In fact, I'm pretty sure there's a brewery of theirs right down the street from us.
Really?
Well, yeah, we live in Austin, right near OneOfUs.net. I mean, we love them. That's why we're subscribers as well. It's the only way they can keep going. That and, well, Oscar Blues Brewing Company, which is their sponsor...
Wow, I feel so much better.
So, you guys out there, think... You've seen Nicolas Cage take it up to 11. Okay, no, you have seen him take it up to 11. Little did you know, the dial goes up to like 19.
I was shocked and appalled, but not surprised.
Not surprised that the dial goes up to 19?
Yeah. Yeah.
We're talking about Mandy, which is the new film by Panos Cosmatos, who, despite his name, actually is obviously American.
Yeah. He's just very exotic.
Yeah, very exotic sounding name. He's the guy, if you guys like... little indie genre festival films, you may have heard of a little movie called Beyond the Black Rainbow, which was dealt with some amount of acclaim from some circles. It was certainly visually really fascinating.
It definitely has a cult following.
Yeah, but my problem with it, I saw it like next to the last night of Fantastic Fest, and I was exhausted, and it was a midnight film, and I was like literally holding my eyes open like Alex in A Clockwork Orange trying to stay awake watching it, because it was very
slow. I kind of want to see you with the cod piece now.
You always say that. Apropos of nothing.
That's just our general conversations.
Right, it was like, have you tried this cheese? You're like, I can kind of see you with a cod piece right now. Anyway, so yeah, Mandy is him going from sci-fi into... almost exploitation horror.
Almost exploitation horror. It's very surreal, but it's very like an homage to a lot of different kinds of horror all mashed together.
Yeah, or influences, if you will. Certainly deeply influenced from the lighting work of Dario Argento.
Absolutely.
And Suspiria. I mean, this thing is covered in primary colors that mm-hmm. are constantly shifting and changing.
And the ambient music.
Yeah, there's like obviously some David Lynch and his weirder, crazier stuff.
Without a doubt, you know? Frank Miller.
Yeah, but the story is that Nicolas Cage, he's a logger, lives out in the mountains with his... girlfriend, wife, not clever, made clear, played by Andrea Riseborough. She's kind of a cool heavy metal chick who like looks
draws
like paints like lurid book covers as far as I can tell. That's never made really clear either. But they seem to be happy with each other. But she's walking down one of the dirt roads in their area, and a van filled with some local cult members drives by, and the cult leader sees her, played by, what's his name?
Linus Roach.
Linus Roach. And, like, immediately decides that they're meant to be together. So he sends his people out to gather her. Well, first they commune with some guys who look like even nastier Cenobites.
Yeah, they're like kind of a cross between the Cenobites and like, you know, Mad Max Fury Road.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, like, at first they're presented as, like, they're demons from hell on bikes, but I guess later they explain, they're like, well, they're actually
just really
bikers who got the bad acid and they went totally insane.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they're poisoned.
Yeah, like, in a really into pain and whatever. So basically they're Cenobites for all extents and purposes.
Yeah.
Cenobites the prequel.
Yeah.
Anyway, so you're not really even sure what that has to do with anything at first, but the bikers go to the cabin and they tie up Nicolas Cage and they abduct his girlfriend who even under the influence of drugs they pump her with wants nothing to do with them, and so they kill her in front of Nicolas Cage. And thus begins the second half of this movie, because I'm sorry, that is a bit of a spoiler even getting there, but there's not a lot of plot to this film really.
Or dialogue.
You spend the whole first half of this film just waiting for Nicolas Cage to turn that dial up. Because he's very restrained and normal for the first half of this film. The first half of this film is a lot more like Beyond the Black Rainbow. It's very colorful and pretty and atmospheric with a great soundtrack by Johan Johansson, who apparently died right after he finished doing the score to this. But not much is happening. I was kind of like, all right, movie, where are we going here? It's pretty, but ain't shit happening. And then we get to Nicolas Cage turning into the vengeance killer, and then the movie picks up significantly.
Yeah, once you hit chapter two, if you can make it to chapter two, the payoff is all there.
Yeah, I mean, it's everything you came to see a movie if you've seen the trailer for this, which is largely just Nicolas Cage screaming and covered in blood, that's what you came to see, and the movie delivers that in spades of him with, like, wow, going into, like, you're like, okay, so he's gonna get revenge. So what's the first thing he does? He goes and forges a crazy, like, 70s heavy metal album cover axe.
Yep.
Like, forges!
Yeah, and then we were talking about that because there's a lot of, like, there's some straight-up animated sequences every once in a while that sort of break up the story. And yeah, it's very reminiscent of heavy metal, and even the director mentioned that he called it a heavy metal rock opera.
Right, and it totally is. By the way, the guy who he initially goes to get his old crossbow back from, I guess, is Bill Duke, who's one of those big, crazy, tall,
recognizable,
like black, like action actors who was in like Commando. He was one of
Predator.
The Commando. He was in Predator. Mm-hmm. So those guys, the moment you see him, you'll be like, oh my
it's
god,
that
I know who
guy
is.
Yeah,
exactly. It's a sadly just small role because I wanted them to team up and go on a revenge.
That would have been awesome.
But Bill's looking a little long in the teeth.
But
these
also,
days,
I think that Nick Cage took. I mean, you don't need anybody else in a scene with Nick Cage.
And Cage is just like I said, he's at like 19 here. There's even, as if it's not Ben, like, just watching him goes to that stage of just where he's just screaming in a bathroom because he's, like, just dealing with the fact his lady just got killed in front of him, and he's angry and sad and going insane all in the same shot. And then he gets dosed with some of the bad acid later, and you're just like, okay, so now you got that Cage on drugs, going around with a crazy axe and a crossbow with, as they described, like, that will go through any bone. Going and killing these cult members and these Cenobite guys one by one in spectacularly brutal
fashion.
Oh,
so good. I mean, I was, like, cackling. One of my favorite things about this movie, and I think that the director, I think that he did it correctly in, you know, with Nick Cage, is that some of my favorite movies with not great actors, where they're fantastic is when they don't have a lot of dialogue. Mm. And you just let them be themselves, but without, like, having to worry about them actually acting.
Cage howls more.
Yeah. This is going to go down and probably my top three all-time favorite Nick Cage roles, without a doubt.
Okay.
Without an absolute doubt. Like, he was absolutely fantastic at this, and he said maybe 10 lines.
I agree with you. Cage was great in this. He was exactly what you want Cage to be when he's in this type of movie, which lately is clear as what his career path is. In fact, we saw a sizable Q&A after the film with the director, Linus Roach, and Nicolas Cage with
with
Kevin Smith running the thing, and at one point Cage describes himself as the California Klaus Kinski, and I was like, I gotta admit, that's pretty dead.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie, that sounds like it. I can't wait to talk more about this Q&A.
But I will say, I didn't love the film quite as much as you did.
I adore this film. This is probably going to go down as one of my top favorite five top favorite horror films of the year.
We haven't even gotten to Fantastic.
I know, yet. We still have a week away for Fantastic.
My issues with it, like I said, that first half, it really does get to the point where it's kind of interminably slow. It's like, okay, guys, let's move this along. And at 121 minutes, that's a full hour of just, like, really pretty, but there's nothing happening. Just like, okay, what does this all mean? A lot of, like, little occasional dream-ish type sequences, and you get little bits of the cult. But, you know, it just goes on and on for a while for me. My other issue is, like, Whereas, like, Argento, for instance, when he uses these primary colors, it's always something that's inherent to the location. That's not what this guy's doing. He's doing the thing where he's using it the way you use primary colors in a haunted house.
Yeah,
where,
like, that's true.
There is an item that is important, and suddenly, for no reason that's obviously not actually happening in the scene,
it's
there's
just
like a
lit-
flashing
yeah.
green light on it or something, and you're like,
yeah.
what is that coming from? I mean, it's I don't... And, I mean, a movie that's this abstract, I'm not honestly complaining about it per se. I'm just saying it called so much attention to that light rather than making it feel just like a part of the atmosphere that it kind of pulled me out of the movie a little
bit. I can definitely see that. I think that you are correct in that that first, you know, whatever hour, it's slow. Yeah. It's pretty slow. I was intrigued because, the music is so atmospheric, and yes, the light may or may not be used as skillfully or artfully as Argento uses it, which I don't think anyone can, to be honest. No. I do think that it sort of adds to the intrigue, and then also that first hour, although slow, you really get a sense of like their relationship and how gentle and delicate it is, and then as opposed to the relationship of the Colt family and how it's just like very like Manson family, helter skelter. You do get this juxtaposition between the two, you know, sets of characters. And I think that I found it intriguing. I did think it was a little slow, but I knew that there was going to be that Nick Cage payoff eventually.
Yeah, that second hour
so
is all payoff.
It was okay with me getting through, like going through that, knowing that I was going to get the batshit insane.
There's literally a chainsaw fight between Cage and a guy who's like 3 feet taller
yeah.
than him, who has a chainsaw. Like, if you've ever seen Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, when like Dennis Hopper has like the 7-foot-long chainsaw.
Like the big daddy of chainsaws, and it's I mean that shit it was awesome.
I mean, just the axe alone is like so cool. I'm just like I would hang that on my wall. I'm not even like I said, I'm not even near as big a fan of this movie as, but that axe.
Send us the axe.
That axe is like the supporting character.
We want the axe.
Best supporting character goes to the axe. You know, I also had issues with the fact there's a really interesting group of cult members, and none of them are given unique personalities at all.
Yeah.
There's just no sense that any of them have their own personality. They're just weird looking people. And that's
well, I
it.
Think it's because they're followers. They're not supposed to have a personality. They're drones.
I don't necessarily agree with that. I mean, they definitely have them, like, you know, the sense that they all kind of have their own thing, that purpose they serve inside the group, but not enough to give them actual character.
I find them all sufficiently creepy.
Yeah, well, they're just creepy looking.
Yeah, well, except for the girl, but and then
except
also,
for the girl, which also weird and explained. There's a young, pretty girl in the cult
who's.
And
I felt
it feels
like she
like this is going to go somewhere. Like she's going to have a bigger part of the story on some level, and she doesn't.
Well, I felt like maybe she was a lot like Mandy, where she had been kidnapped and then had submitted.
Yeah.
To Jeremiah, who is the cult leader.
But that feels like a deleted scene, which, you know,
yeah,
I'm not complaining at a movie that's already 120 minutes long.
I also really liked the whole thing where all of the cult leaders have really big black pupils.
So did Andrea Reisenberg.
Yeah,
no,
and
she had one. That was, like, really weirdly big and oversized.
Yeah.
And they never explain it. It's like,
I just thought
mean?
It was, like, a cool artistic flourish. Yeah. Like, she's, like, half good, half bad.
Okay,
maybe.
So this is a movie that is almost 90% artistic flourishing.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, and that's either going to really appeal to you or you're just totally going to not be into it at all.
See, I felt like that was what like brought her to Jeremiah. I think that's why she appealed to Jeremiah, was because he was like, oh, she's kind of like half.
One of
she's
the
on
eyes.
The she's on the boundary. She has one eye.
Maybe so. All I know is I really enjoyed Nicolas Cage splitting people's heads open.
Holy shit. Yeah,
I'm
when it
coming back to that, because, yeah, it's
that was my favorite part, without a doubt.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, well, the second half of the film.
Yeah.
Yeah, altogether. Just gets brutal and like, I mean, really, really hardcore violent.
Yeah.
Which is, like I said, if you're even considering watching this movie, it's because that's what you came for.
Exactly.
Any of you that are, maybe you are one of those people who's just like, I want to see a really visually intense, very artistic horror film, but that's definitely a horror film. And this is what you're getting. It feels like, it still feels like, much like Beyond the Black Rainbow to me, a film by a director that might very well end up making a masterpiece someday, who's got it in him, who's clearly got all the unafraid, he's got the chops. Obviously, he's made two movies in relatively short time next to each other with no previous real experience, and you're like, okay, so this guy is something that people want to work with him. I'm feeling this guy could do that movie, but I don't think either one of these films are anywhere near that masterpiece.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely has a lot left in him, and I can't wait to see what he does next, for sure.
But let's talk real quick about that Q&A, which you
guys...
I can only assume it's probably going to be on the Blu-ray when they put it out. And this is already out on digital VOD. You guys can watch the movie. But the Q&A... Like, fucking Nick Cage comes out, first off, wearing leather pants, a gold leather jacket, right? Giant gold rings on his fingers.
Elvis sunglasses.
He sits there and already we're all laughing because he looks kind of ridiculous, right? It was like, you really think you're Elvis, don't you? And then he pulls out a pair of, like, giant fucking, like, blood red sunglasses and puts them on and you're
gold,
like,
rimmed, yeah, high heeled boots,
yeah.
And like, it was so funny, Kevin Smith's face you could see Kevin Smith's face as Nick Cage walks out and he's just like trying to hold in his laughter. He's as
like,
much as
it's like we're laughing at him, but in a way that is also
it's endearing, yeah. Absolutely.
Like, because yeah, he's fucking crazy,
because it's Nick
shit.
Cage is being his Nick Cagiest, yeah. You know,
he's crazy, but he's crazy in a way like that's not offensive to anyone. It's just like, dude, you're just crazy in a way that we just can't wait to see what you do next.
Yeah, like every word that came out of his mouth, everyone in the audience was just on their edge of their seat and just waiting to hear what he had to say. And of course he did not disappoint.
No, there's a point where like, what role would you like to play? And he was talking about wanting to play Captain Nemo. And it is the cat's acting insane. It is one of the craziest fucking responses I have ever seen.
And he kept calling it La Mer instead of the sea. He was like, La Mer. Like, well, and I'm in love with the La Mer.
Even though I love my parents, I knew I loved the ocean. La Mer.
La Mer. And my love affair with the sea. And we're just like, and the audience is just crying laughing.
Oh, it's that whole interview is a riot.
Because you can't help but love them.
It'd
you
be
know?
Worth paying just to see that interview.
Absolutely.
So I'm saying everyone else is just, I mean, the director is also kind of a crazy guy. Like his answers are all really bizarre and funny. And then Linus Roach is sitting between
them. Linus Roach is just like,
best to be part of this and like amp himself up as well to be like more fun.
Look
at me. He can't hold a candle to the two guys on either side of him who are just obviously working on a different plane of existence.
Yeah, Linus Roach is just like, I've always wanted, my parents were actors and I always want to be an actor and I did some commercials.
And Nicolas Cage is like, La Mer,
I want to play Nemo and when I was two and I saw the ocean for the first time. And then the director, Panos Cosmatos, is just like, yes, Nick Cage and I like bonded over the fact that I used to like melt my G.I. Joe men and faces off and I used to like dress them up like road warriors.
These are really weird people. It's like, I wouldn't be surprised to see Cage do another film for this director, quite frankly, because they are a perfect match.
They are well matched.
And I will say, we didn't get to review it or anything, but we will shortly, Mom and Dad.
Yeah, we're going to do Mom and Dad on our next episode of Deliberations of Doom.
And it felt like that movie that we've been waiting for Cage to bring it up to 19, and it wasn't.
I loved Mom and Dad, and I pushed hard for that.
It was nowhere near as good as I wanted it to be. There are things I liked about it, but overall,
I thought it was just a fun movie.
I was even
movie.
Disappointed with Cage in it. I was like,
it was a fun movie.
He didn't
movie.
Bring it as much as I was expecting.
He didn't this bring it as the, much as this movie.
This is the movie he brings. Yeah. If you're going for crazy, fucked up, insano Cage just howling at the moon, this is that movie. But, like, I feel like final thoughts feel like almost like unnecessary at this point, but just to get to your final, like a rating, what would you
think? Well, I mean, honestly, I think I liked this movie more than you did. I had such a great time with it. And even though the first, you know, part of the movie tends to drag a little bit, I enjoyed the ambiance of it. And I enjoyed the anticipation of waiting for that moment when all hell breaks, when all cage breaks loose. Andy. And when it did, it was worth every single minute. This movie is like Argento, Barker, and, you know, Frank Miller had a baby, and then you just kind of dusted that baby with just a smidge of Carpenter, and that's what this movie is, I think. And I give it 9 uncircumcised penises out of 10.
Jesus. What did you call that earlier?
The Mongolian death worm.
Mongolian death worm. isn't there actually a movie called Mongolian
death worms? Yeah, with Sean Patrick Flannery.
Oh my God.
Made for sci-fi.
I'm probably never going to watch it. All right. So I kept thinking watching this movie. This is like watching a like 90s heavy metal, like black metal video that's been slowed down at like a quarter speed. Even the music sounds like black metal that's been slowed way down. Like even sometimes the characters' voices inexplicably. This and there's a lot of parts where I was like, quite frankly, couldn't even understand what people were saying.
Yeah.
There's some dialogue parts that are clearly supposed to be essential that I'm like, I have no clue what those characters just said. And we're sitting in a theater with a really great sound system. So I'm like, could use one more pass on the sound mixing is what I'm thinking. Yeah. Or watch it with subtitles. But, that first half, I didn't find it as passable as you did. Because at first I'm like, this is so gorgeous. But after a while, it's just kind of the same thing. It's like, okay, I get your style. I like it. This needs to move along and go somewhere. And it takes a real long while to get there. And then when it goes into the second half, there's such a divider where suddenly Nicolas Cage is in this brightly lit, totally normally shot bathroom with no stylistics to it whatsoever, which may be the only shot in the movie up to this point that's that way, where he just starts howling in pain. And that's that dividing mark. The film goes, okay, and now it's a totally different movie. Because it really does feel, in some ways, like in terms of pacing, certainly, like, wow, suddenly it's a way different film. He's still using a lot of the same stylistics, and there are moments that just kind of, like, feels like it's treading a little water here and there, even in the second sequence. Sometimes art over style over substance isn't a good thing, and there are moments in this film that I found that very true. But I think taken overall, as long as you're wide awake when you're watching this thing, because I think if you're tired, this is not going to be.
Yeah, this is not good if you're.
But like, you're tired. Wide awake. I mean, especially if you just did a bunch of coke and acid, that's probably the ideal way to do it.
There is no way in hell I'd want to watch this movie on acid. Oh my God!
Yeah, it's a slowed down heavy metal movie made for people on acid.
I definitely
it's not. It's made to substitute for being on acid.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you smoke some weed, yeah.
Yeah, but you know. I did genuinely like it. I just wasn't totally in love with it either. There's scenes I'm in love with. There's a lot of the second half I really loved, but taken as a whole, like I said, this ain't this guy's masterpiece, but I have a feeling he might have a masterpiece in him. It just might be a little later down the road. I'm going to give this a 7 out of 10 totally awesome axes hanging on my wall someday.
Nice.
I will have that axe.
We will have that axe.
No, it's my axe.
No, I will cut your head off.